Welcome to SCOTUSCast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUSCast, Securities Act and Statutes of Repose Edition. I'm your host, Christopher Goffis. On June 26, 2017, the Supreme Court decided California Public Employees Retirement System v. ANZ Securities. Between 2007 and 2008, Lehman Brothers Holdings raised capital through a number of public securities offerings. California Public Employees Retirement System purchased some of these securities. In 2008, a putative class action alleging federal securities law violations was filed against respondents, various financial firms involved in underwriting the offerings, and the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York. Because the complaint was filed on behalf of all persons who purchased the identified securities, petitioner CalPERS fell within the putative class. In 2011, however, CalPERS filed a separate action alleging identical violations against respondent firms in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California. That suit was then transferred and consolidated with other related litigation in the Southern District of New York. The New York class action then settled, but CalPERS opted out of the settlement. Respondents thereafter moved to dismiss CalPERS' separate suit based on Securities Act language providing that in no event shall any such action be brought more than 3 years after the security was bona fide offered to the public, the CalPERS suit having fallen outside the three-year limit. CalPERS argued that the time limit was equitably tolled during the pendency of the class action, but the district court rejected the claim and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit affirmed. By a vote of 5-4, the Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the Second Circuit. In an opinion by Justice Kennedy, the court held that CalPERS' untimely filing of its individual complaint more than 3 years after the relevant securities offering was grounds for dismissal. The three-year limitation in the Securities Act, the court indicated, is a statute of repose and therefore not subject to equitable tolling. Justice Kennedy's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch. Justice Ginsburg filed a dissenting opinion in which Justices Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined. And now, to discuss the case, we have Mark Chenoweth, who is General Counsel for the Washington Legal Foundation.
CalPERS v. ANZ Securities grew out of a class action lawsuit brought against a host of underwriters for securities offered in Lehman Brothers back in the 2007-2008 timeframe. You may recall that the Lehman Brothers famously went, or Lehman Brothers, I guess some folks pronounce it, famously went bankrupt in September of 2008, sparking much of the panic around the financial bailouts and the onset of the so-called Great Recession. The class action lawsuit was filed against the underwriters in late 2008, alleging that the registration statements for the Lehman Brothers securities contained material misstatements or omissions in violation of Section 11 of the Securities Act of 1933. In February of 2011, CalPERS, that's the California Public Employees Retirement System, the largest pension system in the United States, CalPERS brought its own separate suit against the underwriters in the Northern District of California. That suit was transferred to the multi-district litigation pending in the Southern District of New York. Soon after that, a settlement was reached on the class action suit and recognized that CalPERS was a member of the class. At that point, CalPERS opted out of the class action suit and wanted to continue its own litigation. The respondents then moved to dismiss the lawsuit as time-barred under Section 13 of the Securities Act. The district court agreed with the respondents and dismissed the suit. The Second Circuit then upheld that dismissal, and the Supreme Court ultimately granted cert in this case, presumably to address a circuit split between the Tenth Circuit on one side and the Sixth, Seventh, and Second Circuits on the other side regarding whether or not Section 13's three-year time bar may be tolled under the Supreme Court's 1974 precedent in American Pipe and Construction Company v. Utah. And tolling, in case you don't know, is the ability to temporarily suspend a statute of limitations, often for equitable reasons, to allow a suit to go ahead and proceed that might otherwise be time-barred. in what was apparently the first 5-4 decision of this Supreme Court term in which Justice Kennedy wrote for the traditional conservative alignment of himself, Justice Roberts, Justice Thomas, Justice Alito, and Justice Gorsuch, the court upheld the Second Circuit and did not toll the statute of repose. As Justice Kennedy said at the end of his opinion, you know, the final analysis here is straightforward. Quote, the 3-year time bar in Section 13 of the Securities Act is a statute of repose. Its purpose and design are to protect defendants against future liability. The statute displaces the traditional power of courts to modify statutory time limits in the name of equity. Because the American pipe tolling rule is rooted in those equitable powers, it cannot extend the 3-year period. Petitioner's untimely filing of its individual action is ground for dismissal. So that's a pretty brisk summary. So let's slow down and unpack that a bit before looking at the implications of the decision. First of all, the holding of the court is that Section 13 is a statute of repose. And the court decided that for 4 reasons, beginning with language and text, then looking at structure and purpose, then moving on to history and precedent. Unlike a statute of limitations, which runs from the time a cause of action first accrues, a statute of repose runs from the last culpable act or omission of the defendant. And the statute here says, quote, in no event shall any such action be brought to enforce a liability created under Section 11 more than 3 years after the security was bona fide offered to the public. Unquote. Because the 3-year time bar runs from the last act of the defendant, the court construed it as a statute of repose. In fact, the court said under its prior CTS v. Waldberger precedent that, quote, this point is close to a dispositive indication, unquote. In other words, any statutory time limit that appears to be attached to the last act of the defendant, as opposed to when a cause of action accrues, is likely going to be determined to be a statute of repose going forward. The next factor that the court looked at was the structure and purpose. And here the court noted that there's a pairing in Section 13 of 2 different time bars. There's a 1-year statute of limitations, and then there's this 3-year time bar. And I won't quote the statutory language on the 1-year statute of limitations, but suffice it to say that the court recognized that if there's already a 1-year statute of limitations in the statute, then this 3-year time bar has to be doing something else. And the court explained that statutes of limitation and statutes of repose frequently are found together and they work in concert, and that this is an additional reason to believe that this 3-year time bar was a statute of repose. The court next looked at the statutory history, the legislative history, and found that that also supported the view that this is a statute of repose. It didn't spend a lot of time on that, but noted that Congress had first adopted a longer statute of repose of about 10 years, but soon abandoned that and shortened it to the current 3-year time limit. The court also then noted almost in passing that it had described Section 13 as establishing, quote, a period of repose, unquote, in its 1991 Lamp, Leva, Lipkind, Prupus, and Pettigrew versus Gilbertson case. So looking then at the text and the structure and the history and the precedent, the court said, you know, this is a statute of repose. And once the court had determined that Section 13 is a statute of repose, the case was pretty much open and shut. The court held that statutes of repose are rarely subject to tolling. It mentions that a statute might contain an express exception as one example of a time when a statute of repose might not be absolute. And the reason for this is that statutes of repose, the purpose of them is ending liability, and tolling would undermine that legislative purpose. So a question might still arise about whether some sort of general tolling statute might apply to a statute of repose, because that would be one legislative instruction aligning against another legislative instruction. But where equitable, meaning judge-made tolling is concerned, the court held that a statute of repose, quote, supersedes the court's residual authority and forecloses the extension of the statutory period based on equitable principles, unquote. In short, then, statutes of repose may not be tolled equitably, and that's an important holding. Thus, the equitable tolling principles of American pipe, on which the petitioner's argument rested very heavily, was deemed utterly irrelevant by the court. The court went into some detail explaining the logic of American pipe and kind of cast a little bit of shade on it by noting that the court there had not gone into a careful discussion of the principles behind equitable tolling, but it nonetheless recognized that American pipe was an instance of equitable tolling, but refused to apply it here because this is a statute of repose and not a statute of limitations. The petitioner had a secondary argument and argued that the class action complaint itself made its own complaint timely. The court did not buy that argument either. It noted that were separate actions and that the petitioner's logic would completely undermine statutes of repose by preventing a defendant from calculating its liability. If any time someone has been a member of a class action, they can opt out and then years later they can bring their own action, then that proves too much, and that would completely undermine the statute of repose. I should note that even though Justice Ginsburg, writing for the four dissenters, accepted the American pipe tolling argument that petitioners offered, even the dissenters have a footnote saying that they would limit the ability to file your own action until the time when the class action ends. So they wouldn't want that to go on forever either. A couple of other points that the petitioner tried to make. One was that its right to opt out of a class action would be eviscerated if the statute of repose came into play. The majority said, no, that's not true. You just have to be timely in your opt-out, and that there's nothing about having the right to opt-out, nothing about that due process right to opt-out that allows you to avoid the statutory time limit. And the fourth argument that the petitioner made was that it would create inefficiencies to enforce the statute of repose. And the court did not agree with that either and said, quote, the court lacks the authority to rewrite the statute of repose, unquote. So notwithstanding any inefficiencies that might be created, the court was not willing to go against the legislative instruction here. Two more points to make about the inefficiencies point. The court notes that the Second Circuit has had this rule in place since 2013 and has not seen the kind of influx of protective filings that the petitioner was trying to predict would be a calamity here. The petitioner also had a kind of retired judge's amicus brief that made the case that if you enforce the statute of repose, you'll have lots of members of the class filing their own lawsuits before the statute of repose time period just in order to ensure that they can opt out later. And so what the court said is, well, gosh, we're not seeing that in the Second Circuit so far, so we're a little skeptical about the likelihood of that. The second point about inefficiencies that the court makes, and this is where it cites the WLF amicus brief, is that there's a process already in place to protect plaintiffs' interests, and that therefore it's not as onerous as the petitioner claims. You don't have to file your own separate action in order to protect your opt-out interests. It's possible within the context of the class action itself to preserve your rights to bring a later action, and you don't have to file an entirely separate prophylactic suit in order to do that. So because of the not seeing any concern with the inefficiencies there, that wasn't going to sway the court either. Now let me turn to the takeaways from the decision. I think the first one is that this ruling by upholding the statute of repose should put a stop to the holdout leverage problem. What is the holdout leverage problem? What do I mean by that? There's a cottage industry in securities class action litigation in particular of boutique law firms, boutique plaintiffs law firms that approach a lot of these institutional investors like CalPERS. And as the class action settlement negotiations are continuing with class counsel, these folks will go to some of the biggest folks in the class and say, hey, if you opt out at the last minute, we can get a better deal for you than the rest of the class will obtain. And that's true. If they do opt out, they can do that. And so that has created a problem for the remaining members of the class who then are subjected to an extension of negotiation sometimes, or there's an unfairness inherent in that because the one party is getting paid more than the other members of the class just because it has undue amounts of settlement leverage. And that was something that the court recognized in this decision. It doesn't say that that was a basis for its decision, but I can't help but think that recognizing that holdout leverage problem at least balanced some of the inequities that the petitioner was claiming on the other side of the balance. The second takeaway here is that decision will affect statutes of repose in many federal statutes across the federal code. It will not just be limited to the securities law. Even though this is a statutory interpretation case in one sense, it's also a case about what's the difference between a statute of repose and a statute of limitations, and is there going to be an ability to toll that statute of repose? There's nothing about the logic of this decision that can't cross-apply to other areas of federal law. And the last takeaway I want to mention, and need to credit Ronald Mann for this point in the nice article he wrote about this case at SCOTUS blog, that the court seems to be avoiding case-by-case equitable judgments about the timeliness of litigation. And he mentioned the SCA hygiene case from earlier this term and one other case for the idea that whether it's latches in the SCA hygiene case or whether it's a statute of repose here, that the court is trying to get away from having these case-by-case equitable determinations about litigation timing and instead is really shown itself willing to enforce the statutory limits, whether they are in favor of longer time to bring a lawsuit, as was the case in SCA hygiene, or whether it shortens the time in which you can bring a lawsuit, as was the case in CalPERS v. ANZ Securities.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.